And I still believe that these problems can be solved.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death!
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
This is The Political Show.
Hey, 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 and welcome to The Political Show right here on Active FM, where radio has never been better. I'm your girl Cynthia, but you know you can call me Gix, and with me in studio we have...
Gavin Inslin.
Pastor Gavin Inslin.
No, right? Black Knight.
No Black Knight. Right here on The Political Show, where Christ Politics is...
Hot Politics.
Hot Politics. And this week's Hot Politics, I am going to give it to Pastor Gav to explain what we are speaking about.
Well, I mean, there's all of this talk going on about tariffs and Trump... and Ramaphosa, and AfriForum, and what's his name, Kali Creel, and Ernst Lutz. And you look at all of this, you know, Trump's announced tariffs against South Africa and about 100 other countries in the world. And looking at all of this, we're going to be looking at what's really going on with trade, with the guest that I think, looking at their credentials, knows a little bit more about the trade. You know, the nuances behind the world trade and, you know, all of those sorts of things, African trade. You know, what's the role of China in this? Mm-hmm. Are they going to save us from Trump?
Yes.
Or are they part of the problem?
Yeah.
You know, Russia, Ukraine, whatever. Yeah. All of those sorts of things. So, yes, I'm looking very forward to this. And I suppose we can call this show Tariff Wars.
Tariff Wars. This is an exciting show. Like Pastor Gavin mentioned, we do have a guest with us, and she is an assistant lecturer and tutor coordinator at the University of Johannesburg, the Department of Politics. That is why she's on our show. And international relations, and her research niches are energy and mineral resources, international political economy, political risk analysis, and African intellectualism. That is who we have on the show, and I'll give it over to her to introduce herself as well.
Thank you. Thank you for such a good introduction. My name is Nzanama Mathebula from the University of Johannesburg, the Department of Politics and International Relations. And I hold a position of an assistant lecturer here. And yeah, I hope I will be insightful to the show as much as I can and give my opinion on what is happening around the world.
That is awesome. It's going to be a hot show, as always, because this is The Political Show, where Christ Politics is.
Before I say it's Hot Politics,
yeah.
Tell all your friends, get them to listen right now. Hot Politics.
Hot Politics.
Stay updated and stay entertained
on Active FM.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, LinkedIn, Spotify, Anchor, and everywhere else. Engage with us, like posts, comment, share them out, retweet, and repost. Spread the word. Active FM. Radio has never been better.
So we have a guest with us, Nzalama Mathebula, who is an assistant lecturer and tutor coordinator at the University of Johannesburg, Department of Politics and International Relations. And some of her recent publications have explored the following research and analysis. So she's looked at the examination of China's soft power through their infrastructure, investment in the Middle East and African continent. She's done an analysis of the special and unexplored scenario of sovereign risk due to IMF's 70 billion rand loan to South Africa in 2020. She's also done on a backdrop of recent coups in Western and Central Africa. Academics sought to uncover the reasoning and drive behind what seemed a pattern of instability within the regions, and another piece with a focus on two international law cases, which was the South African International Court of Justice case against Israel. We did speak about that in the show. And the USA International Criminal Court case against Russia. So this is going to be a very, very interesting show. We have a couple of questions for Nzalama, and we are interested to see what your opinions are on these questions. All right, so the first question that I have for you is, from your research on China's soft power through infrastructure investments, what lessons can emerging economies like South Africa learn about navigating partnerships with global powers?
Okay, so I would like to mention that we live in a very interesting changing global order, whereby it's important for states to deem themselves as strategic players rather than being within the international arena. So it becomes important for you to be strategic within the whole international arena in which you can be able to benefit and to deduce whatever benefits you can have from the international arena and the setting. What we can learn from superpowers and partnerships, firstly, you need to go into a partnership as a country, ensuring that it is beneficial to you to a certain extent. Yeah. So on the publication on soft power and soft power that you have, China and the Middle East and in the African continent, you get to understand that whatever benefits you're going to have from the partnership that you have with a country like China, a superpower like China, you get to understand that China gets doubled of that. Firstly, so I would like to put that into context. Firstly, to say that it is important to navigate, or it is important to understand not only what you benefit, but the extent or the magnitude of the beneficiation that you would have from partnerships, right? Yeah. So then that would help you to construct your trade agreements, your partnerships, cooperations with other countries, because this is the same argument that we've been having that has been echoed, right, throughout history, on whether aid is actually good for Africa or not. Mm. Many of global South countries. Because if you do receive aid, but then you cannot necessarily domesticate it, or you cannot actually translate it into good investments or into employment, into development, then what is the benefit or what good is to have aid, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes important for states to actually navigate this terrain and understanding where they belong, firstly, where they would mostly benefit, secondly, and how should they approach the cooperation, considering that they have a list of beneficial effects that they would have from the partnership. So this speaks so much to the foreign policy of the country, and the approach is quite important. If it is going to be soft, if it's going to be hard, if it is going to be coercive. So it's important for countries to firstly state out their foreign policy. It should be clear and the approach in which they can approach their foreign policy and implement it within their territory.
Yeah.
Could I just jump in here? Yeah? So obviously, China's been involved with our neighbor Mozambique in developing oil resources and things like that. And you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that that I've heard is that China built a road for Mozambique. And now what's happening is that the oil that's been extracted by them, they've got their own people, you know, they formed like their own town with their own people.
Mm.
And basically China's not paying for the oil. So, you know, first of all, to what extent is that, you know, well, it's CSA. It's, you know, from our side, to what extent is that true, and you know, what risks would you see for South Africa in engaging in infrastructure development with someone like China?
Well, yes, there is a lot about China that has been said. You have debt, diplomacy, collateral damage, kind of partnerships in which their partnerships are quite soft. You know, they have soft power in approaching countries. But then we have to understand, and to a certain extent, yes, I would like to answer the question, but that to a certain extent can be true, because it can also be said about other African states, such as your DRC, such as your Ethiopia, Angola, in which China has had a partnership with many of those countries, and it seems that the beneficiation does not concur to a win-win situation as they present it when you get into a partnership, right? A 50-50 deal. It doesn't work that way. So then what we understand, firstly, is that there are two sides to a win and there are two sides to a partnership. So you would get to understand that the effects of the China partnership in different countries, they become different depending on the country in which they are approaching. So what I'm trying to say is South Africa would benefit differently from Ethiopia, from Mozambique. And this speaks so much to what we call country fundamental dynamics or country fundamental variables. I'm talking about macroeconomics. But it looks at your country dynamics, country-specific dynamics on your governance levels, on the quality of governance that you have in your country, if you can actually domesticate aid or not, if you can go into agreement. So it's one thing to give a country an investment, but it's another thing on how they use that investment to actually grow themselves. So what I'm trying to say is you can find a country, for example, such as Burundi, even the DRC, in which the government itself doesn't do enough to protect its mines against such partnerships, right? So what you find is, I think in the case of Burundi, if not DRC, there is a legislation on mining, on ownership of the mines, and it states that only 10% of the mines can be owned by Burundians or Congolese people. Which is quite, it's surprising, because
so,
if you are...
So I just wanted to check, are you saying that in Congo, their law says that it's okay if 90% of their mines are owned by foreign nationals?
Yes. So those are the type of agreements that they get into.
Yeah.
So it becomes important for a country to be sovereign at first, before they can even enter into trade agreements with other countries and be on par with them. Because if you're in a lower rank and you need funds more than the country that is proposing the investment, you are more likely to actually go by their rules. So you have the idea of sovereignty fitting into this whole trade agreement stuff. So the trade agreements themselves, they should be shaped by your interests, hence my point on foreign policy, on how it should be clear and how you are going to approach it. But provided that you have countries, many of our African countries, the governance is not good, the quality of governance is not good. So even those countries, the development is stagnant to a point whereby they need bailouts. So then they're going to get loans from a country like China. This is what they call this, the debt trap or the debt diplomacy. Whereby China will give you a loan that you won't be able to pay, and other multilateral institutions. And then they have mines as collateral damage provided that you cannot actually pay. So the mines themselves, the minerals, they get to cover the fallout provided that you cannot actually pay that loan. And this feeds into your economy, which is not well managed, poor governance that's in place. You know, so there are many dynamics that actually get to determine how a country's trade agreements get to benefit them at the end.
Yeah. Another question we had was, and I think you've mentioned it now, is looking at the Congo conflict and the role of mineral resources. What strategies can African nations adopt to ensure that their natural wealth fosters stability rather than fuels conflict?
Yeah, especially looking at what's going on in the East.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not just China that's ripping the DRC off.
Mm-mm.
It seems like they're being ripped off by everyone.
Yeah.
So what you find is the DRC, firstly, it has to get its house in order before they can even outsource from outside. So it becomes important for countries to have their governance in check, to ensure that their development is in check, their economies are in check. So investors shouldn't come into a country because the country needs to be saved, but investors should come because we both need to grow or we want to grow. So there should be some form of mutual beneficiation that you find from the trade agreements. But what you find in the DRC is the governance is so bad. The state has collapsed to a point whereby anyone and everyone who wants to get into the country and conduct their business, they are able to. So then this actually raises a question on their political landscape to a point whereby we get to actually analyze their previous decades of political leadership or governance as to what happened and how did we get here to the state. Because it's really hard for a country, you cannot necessarily evade a country which has a strong military or which has a strong rule of law. So before you even get to negotiate with the country, you should understand that they are on the same footing as you. So what I'm trying to show here is leadership is very important, right? So you do not need leadership that will actually have some form of inflicting behavior or inflicting effects, self-inflicted effects on your or on your country. But what you find is when vested interests get to be politicized or they get to be relegated as policy, the state is bound to fall out. And when the state is bound to fall out, then it becomes easier for countries to negotiate with you, even if it's not to your benefit, but it works for them. So what I'm trying to say is the DRC itself has to fix its politics first before they can even approach international or foreign funders or even investors in partnerships and trade agreements. So if the politics are good of that country, if the governance is good, then it's easier to see the direction where we are going as a country and how we should shape our foreign policy. So currently we have a number, which is not even a coalition. It is a coalition, but it doesn't make sense. It's all over the place, sorry to say. But so that gets to show you how the political system is quite, there are too many factions within the political system. And it's easier to collapse a state because of corruption, because of poor governance to an extent whereby you have a number of rebel groups who can actually thwart the whole state, the whole governance. So when at that point the constitution becomes suspended, nothing is functional in the country. So even actors who can benefit or who can leverage on such fallouts, they do so by all means.
Just to add to that, would you then say that Congo is in a catch-22 situation because their economy is at such a bad state, the government is also in such a bad state, that they kind of have to rely on foreign investments to be able to get the country going?
Yes, that's what happens. Yeah. So that's what happened. So if you do rely on foreign investments or on outsourced funds for your state revenue, for your state expenditure, that steals your sovereignty as a state. It means that you do not have space, you do not have fiscal space within an economic sense, or you do not have a political platform whereby you can actually determine what policies you want and how you want them promulgated. Because whether we like it or not, the economy determines the development model of a country. It determines the song that you sing, it determines who leads, who doesn't. So it is so intertwined with the politics of the country. While the politics actually emanate to power and who's in charge, but the economics get to underpin that on who gets to be in charge and how they get to shape the policy. Yeah. So this goes back to the idea of policy owners, of who owns the policy. So if it's not the DRC people owning the policy, obviously it is less likely to benefit them.
I just wanted to ask, leading on from that, how close or how far would you say South Africa is from having sort of that level of state collapse that we've already got the Zamas.
Yeah.
You know, close to where we are here. The place is riddled. In fact, I saw a thing on Carte Blanche where the Zamas that are here with less than a kilometer from where we're sitting right now even have anti-aircraft guns, you know, to defend themselves with. So how far are we from that sort of a situation in South Africa?
So honestly speaking, South Africa is not perfect. Obviously, it is not perfect. But South Africa is not that, definitely. and we are less likely to get to that point. And this goes back to our political system. So let me give an example. If there was an opportunity for us to collapse, it would have happened last year, in last year's elections, whereby we didn't even have a party that had majority votes to actually rule the country. But instead, we were able to understand that we have a collective duty, we have collective objectives, and as much as they can be pink, blue, but they're still in the same basket. So it makes sense that we do have a collective objective towards what we want. But at the same time, we have a strong political state. We have a strong democracy whereby you are given the right to vote. So the moment a state collapses, it's because the democracy has become so deficient that it's easier to invade it. So what I'm trying to say is, if your parents aren't doing the right thing, if they're not being ethical, or if the person who's the leader is not being ethical, it's easier to collapse them than an ethical leader. So what you find is the rule of law is respected. The constitution is still in check, although none of these things are perfect, because I cannot advocate to say that 100% we actually respect the rule of law. 100% our democracy is free and fair. However, it is in place. It is implemented. Although implementation can be hard at times. So the moment you have a strong democracy, it's not likely that you will have, one day you will have a military group out of nowhere coming to thwart you, because the state itself is stable to a certain extent. So without a deficient democracy, you then get to understand that executive, you get to respect the executive of the country. It's easier, it's easier to thwart a deficient democracy. So you should look at many of the countries whereby there are coups, right? And you should look at their democracy index, right? You will see that their democracies are quite deficient. So then it becomes easier for the military apparatus within the state to actually thwart such or to overthrow such a government, because the government itself lacks credibility. It is illegitimate, right? Unlike within the South African case. So the day we have an illegitimate government, not saying that, we do know that there are a number of cases whereby many of our politicians have been actually been seen in cases of corruption. However, there is a due process that is followed, and those are procedural requirements of a democracy to say that if something happens, something must take place. Yeah. Justice should be brought to the book. So when you have an illegitimate government whereby accountability 0%, transparency 0%, then it's easier to thwart such a government because it is not legitimate itself. So if I were to recruit people now, say that, can you please join my gang or join my rebel group, my insurgent group, because we want to thwart the ANC, where would we start? However, if there is a deficient democracy or a government that you know for sure that they have too many, if none, a number of mistakes, and it's even visible within the state itself or the country, then it's easier to thwart them because they are illegitimate themselves.
Yeah. And we see now that the global financial markets are experiencing a significant volatility due to the recent, according to a lot of the publications, news publications, they say due to the recent U.S. tariffs that have been implemented. And
well, the entire world markets are going to crash because of Trump's tariffs.
That's what they're saying. And there's political uncertainties in various regions and stuff like that. I mean, we see with the South African currency, how it's depreciated a lot. The agricultural sector in the U.S. have imposed a 30% tariff to all South African goods. There's the situation with the global markets where major U.S. stocks basically have declined amid the uncertainty surrounding Trump's tariffs. So we see all of this that is happening, and we just want to get your opinion on whether you think the recent problems in our markets are mainly because of Trump's tariffs, or are there other issues that are also making things worse? When we're speaking about other issues, we're looking at here specifically in South Africa. So is it solely because of the tariffs that Trump has imposed, or are there issues at home as well that are contributing to the decline?
Okay, so with everything that's happening in the USA with the Trump 2.0 administration, I would like to argue that it should be anticipated that the markets will act the way that they are acting. Yeah. Because we should remember that the USA is a very big economy, which has an impact on every economy because they trade with most of the countries and they have a big economy. But more than anything, I'd like to mention that markets are sensitive. They are quite sensitive.
Yeah,
that's one thing we should understand. So they have this intricate link or tie to politics, whether internationally or domestically. So it is important for us to say that. So all I'm trying to say is we shouldn't be scared. This shouldn't scare any of us.
Yeah.
It's normal more than anything.
Yes, I connect. Can I connect to your phone? Can I connect to your phone?
Yeah.
Then the African context, when South Africa is going through some challenges that actually have tend to affect its economy. That are in partnerships with South Africa. So it is, markets are quite sensitive, right? They're very sensitive. That is no secret, and this is not the first time this is happening. Definitely will not be the last time this happens.
Yeah.
However, so yeah, it's also domestic and international impacts or events that actually get to affect our market. So, but mainly from what we have right now, I would attribute this. The depreciation of our rent, of our currency, to the GNU, right? And its factions within the GNU. And also the Trump administration, which gets to affect the rent. However, what I would like to mention is that in order for us to avoid this, because it is unavoidable, the US dollar itself is declining. It is unavoidable. So you get to understand that we live in a world whereby anything gets to shape world politics, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's wars, whether it's a state actor, whether it's anything, globalization, because we are that globalized and we are interdependent with each other. But it becomes important for us to have some form of operational resilience within our economy to say that our rent shouldn't be, it will be impacted, but we should then guard against the magnitude or the extent of the impact. Say that if it does erode buying power, to what extent should it erode buying power? If it does actually affect unemployment, to what extent? So then that's when we bring in the macroeconomic, fiscal, and monetary policy of the country. That's when the government has the role to actually ensure that even though there are tariff wars all over the world, our economy shouldn't be impacted to that extent. So now I'm talking about interest rates, I'm talking about the macroeconomic variables of the country. And so far, the South African Reserve Bank has been performing well. Because if you look at the interest rates, if you look at the inflation rates of other countries, you'll be shocked to understand that even the smallest event that happens in the USA has an impact on these economies to that certain extent. So that actually shows you the robustness of the economy itself to say that it can withstand storms, it can withstand whether domestically or internationally. So the idea is to ensure that the economy is robust, strong enough to withstand anything that happens, because this is not the last event. Definitely not the first. So what you need then is operational resilience to ensure that irrespective of whether it's raining, sunny, there's hail, the storm, you are still able to continue to be resilient going forward. So that is the important part. And that's where domestic policy comes in. That's where the government, so the government doesn't have the power to determine what will happen tomorrow in Yemen and how it will affect South Africa, or whether just the energy transition can just kick in tomorrow. And, so there are many events that we are not in control of, But one thing that we are in control of is to ensure that our economy is resilient enough to ensure that everyone has buying power, everyone has affordability, because within an economy, although the economy, the GDP might be high, we should ensure that everyone contributes towards the GDP. To say that there shouldn't be so much economic marginalization within our economy. So the resilience of the economy, that's what we should ensure. And this is, talks about employment, it talks about the Gini coefficient levels that should go down. It talks about a number of things, the inflation rate, interest rates, macro and microeconomic variables that should be on the par. The GDP should go up irrespective of whether we have tariffs from the USA or not. So what you find is South Africa has started to be in talks with many other countries on establishing or venturing into new trade agreements with countries. So this actually shows you that there is a fallout, but there's also opportunity to ensure that there's resilience beyond these boundaries. Because one thing we should understand is that President Trump won't be president forever. Yeah. So this is just an administrative phase that we are going through. And I do believe that a number of strategies that can be employed by South Africa to ensure that do not collapse.
Yeah,
just one more question from my side. Just listening to you, would I be correct in saying that you're quite optimistic about the outlook for South Africa going into the future, and why?
I am optimistic about the whole world, actually, because I do believe that before we even got here, there were too many crises in which maybe I was not even born. There was World War One, World War Two. You had the Cold War series. So many of these things, they get to resurface themselves or actually reignite themselves in different names. But what we are seeing today is not something new, right? When you study history. So this is not the first time South Africa finds itself in such a situation, and it will not be the last time. But one thing that I've noted is many of the countries we have survived, for a young democracy, we have survived all those events, you know, all those geopolitical shocks, the tensions. So yes, definitely there is room. So what I'm trying to say is where there is a fallout or where there's a fallout, there's opportunity. It booms somewhere, right? So if you cut down one tree, just know that whatever seeds are going to fall off are going to raise another tree.
That's a good
quote.
So
that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
One more from you.
That's a very good. I think my last question would just be in terms of how you've spoken about the foreign investments, the loans, and all of these things, and looking at South Africa, because we are in quite a bit of debt as a nation, but we are optimistic, like you mentioned, about the future of South Africa's economy and things like that. What are your thoughts in terms of the debt South Africa is in, the efforts that the government of national unity is doing, if any?
So it's now the government of national disunity, GND.
If there are any efforts, obviously, because like it has been mentioned and how we've seen in media as well, that the government is not really working amongst each other. They're more against each other based on what we've seen than working together. So what are your thoughts on that? What are the ways that we could look at as a nation to say that this is the best way forward to reduce the debt, to get more foreign investments that actually have that are there to help the country's development instead of just take from the country's resources and stuff?
Thank you for that question. So firstly, yeah, we are in debt for the first time since the dawn of democracy, but those were desperate times and South Africa needed to take that loan during COVID times. But what we've seen, I think we started paying our loan last year, December. That's when we started. So there are a number of scenarios that we can actually thrust out of this whole situation on debt. So one thing that South Africa should ensure is what we call debt sustainability. And I will show you a very good example of what debt sustainability is. So when we took the loan, yes, we took the loan, we used it, some of it went on to corruption, it was wasted there. But more than anything, it's to ensure that the debt levels do not surpass your GDP or the revenue that you collect or the production and the money that you make annually from a country. And how has our government ensured that we do get to that level? It's what we call VAT, right? So there was a VAT increase most recently.
We're very happy about it. It's
a very painful topic.
No, I'm not happy, but I did anticipate it, actually. When I was writing my master's, I was like, okay, this will happen. So when a government takes debt, they know that the people are going to pay the debt are the citizens, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
I'll show you a number of a series of examples for you to understand as to, okay, this is how we got here, right? So the moment you take debt, because, and we've taken it with IMF, but also with African Development Bank, but many of the conditionalities that come from the IMF, they are quite harsh, and they are more likely to actually erode your state capacity, development, sovereignty. We've seen this from history on how the IMF has been within the African continent. So the moment they took the debt, they knew that there was a plan in place in order for them to pay the debt, because whatever revenues they were making at the time was covering the expenditure that was there, right?
Yeah.
So the VAT itself is actually revenue to pay off the debt, right? To ensure that there's debt sustainability. So that's the reason why there's these sudden hikes from all over the place. And another example that I can give you is, so there was a two-pot system last year where people were encouraged to take their pension early, or you can take one part of your pension. So you should go back and look at the revenue that was collected by the government around the time and note when it was collected, right? Mm-hmm. And note when we started paying our debt to the IMF. Mm-hmm. Then you'll get to understand that there's a series of not examples, but plans on how they can actually cover the debt, although it won't be said to us explicitly to say that we are taking this money because we want to pay our IMF debt. No, but there will be a number of series or examples that can be given to say that we need to hike our debt, we need to do this and that in order for them to ensure that there's debt sustainability, because more than anything, you need to ensure that you do not default, because the moment you default, then the dire consequences,
yeah,
long-term implications of where your economy might be in the next 5 years. So they are paying their debt, and we can tell this by the Fed hike. even the tax went up. Yes, yeah. Your pay as you earn tax, it went up. So just know that it is for servicing our debt that we took from the IMF in 2020. So, yeah. So that's just additional revenue that is created to ensure that there isn't a fallout from the loans that we took. And I think on your second question, you asked about pulling in investments that can ensure that we do develop as a country. So I would like to agree with that, yes, investments are good, but at most, we should actually aim for what we can call domestic capital accumulation or domestic monetary accumulation. So now I'm talking about the diversification of an economy to ensure that, or we should think more along the lines of how can we make more money within South Africa without needing any foreign investments? Do we have gas that we can extract? Do we have talent that we can actually outsource? Mm. Do we have plants that we can, energy plants that can make more money? So our lines shouldn't be, so we should avoid a culture of having to need revenue externally, because there's a danger with that, right? You'll be in what we call a debt spiral, debt trap. So you'll need more debt to finance debt, you know. And many of the aids, although they're called aid, they're not necessarily aid. No. Those are loans,
yeah,
right? They're called aid, but many of them are loans. So it is important for us to ensure that we have a robust economy. So aid should be an enhancer to an already functioning and booming economy. So this looks at trading. It looks at, so you should invite trade agreements instead of aid agreements more.
Yeah.
So your aid shouldn't surpass your trade.
Mm. Yep. So that's a very good answer. In 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, it says,
I just wanted to say, I mean, we told you it wasn't going to be an adversarial thing, but we wouldn't have had anything to argue with.
Yeah, I think we've agreed with what you've mentioned.
Yeah, and you've made us think about stuff we never thought of, like now with the repayments and things like that.
Yes, definitely.
But we still hate the VAT increases.
So in 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, it says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment.
Yeah, so look, obviously, you know, we share the sentiment about the nation.
Yeah.
And we also ourselves, you know, because the church is strong in South Africa and also because of the people, and you know, we've still got so much wealth in the ground, we're also very optimistic about this country, and we're not about to emigrate, you know, something like that. And there was a point that was made, you know, by our guest here today relating to the markets are sensitive. And you know, everything in this world is sensitive. Everything is sensitive, yet that's what Paul says, command those who are rich in this world not to put their trust in riches.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything that can be shaken will be shaken. That's what it says in the book of Hebrews as well.
Yeah.
And so I want to encourage everyone, you know, if you trust God, even now when Trump does his tariffs and the GNU seems to be falling apart and, you know, people are cheering in Parliament because VAT has been increased. I don't think that's a good view for those politicians. But anyway, because when I go vote, I'm going to remember those pictures. You know, they're all standing there and you're going to pay more, you know, and all of that sort of stuff. But even when all of that stuff's happening, you know, the Lord is there. And there's a lot of people in this country love the Lord. And, you know, it's never mind God's not finished with South Africa. I actually think if you look at our past, you look at all the racial things we had, you know, even some of the stupid things people say today, and many people say many stupid things in our nation. I actually agree with you that if South Africa was going to fall apart, it would have fallen apart with the election.
Yeah.
And I think it would have fallen apart in 2021 when we had the riots. And, you know, but when you trust the Lord, then you're not going to fall apart when the world gets a cold or something like that. So that's just my thought for the day. And obviously this was a very uplifting discussion. And I think there's much to be uplifted by, because, you know, God is still there.
Yeah.
And he's still on the throne.
Amen. This has been an amazing show. Thank you so much, Nzalama, for your insight and fresh perspective. There's so much that you've mentioned that I haven't really looked at. And stuff. So it was really, really an amazing show. Right here on Active FM, where radio has never been better. On the political show, you've had myself, Cynthia, but you know you can call me Gix. And with me in studio, you've had
Gavin Inslin.
Pastor Gavin Inslin, and our guest,
Nzalama Mathebula.
We've had Nzalama Mathebula right here on the political show, where Christ politics is
hot politics.
Hot politics.
We help distributors grow their sales by over 15% in the first 90 days with our automated mobile software solution. RapidTrade is used by over 16,000 users worldwide, and we process over 120,000 transactions per day on both iOS and Android. From app ordering and management to e-commerce and even van sales, or electronic proof of delivery, we've got your business covered. Call us for a demo on 011-493-9755 or email us at sales@rapidtrade.com. Go on. Make your customer a happy one today by getting onto RapidTrade.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.